Okay, why don't we go ahead and get started? And everyone, if you could just say your name and your affiliation.
Mike Goodwin, I'm the developer representative, government appointee.
Jean Langendorf, I'm the rural housing appointee, governor.
Mark Wyatt with TDA.
This is Dave Dannenfelser with Texas State Affordable.
And welcome, Dave, to your first housing committee call. I appreciate you joining with us and taking over for Paige. And why don't we get into it? The first item was old business. In case anyone had any additional edits for me on the chapters that had been provided to you all at the last conference call. So those were chapters 2, 4, and 5 of the plan. Just in case you had any comments you wanted to make known, I wanted to make sure that there was an opportunity during this call.
I have no addition.
Okay. All right, if there's no comments on the draft chapters, then we can move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the additional ideas for housing policy and funding recommendations. So since we talked so much about edits to our current recommendations at the last call, we didn't actually get to this item on the last call, which was how we want to move forward with any additional recommendations. And so there is the handout that's called Additional Ideas that everyone should have received. And I mentioned it last time, but basically we have our list of 2010-2011 recommendations. And you know, given the fact that it's only been about a year and a half since our last plan was submitted to the governor and the LBB. So I think that, you know, it makes sense to look back at those recommendations and say, hey, we need to make sure we recommend this one again, or hey, we've moved a certain way towards meeting this recommendation, but here are some next steps. So I wanted to bring back our recommendations from the last plan to this committee to say which ones do we need to keep in this upcoming plan, and then also what are additional ideas that we didn't touch on in the 2010-2011 plan. And those are the bullet points at the top that I was just trying to throw out. You know, here are funding sources that we never touched on, or ideas that we never touched on in the 2010-2011 plan that maybe we could discuss this time around. So basically, I'm kind of wanting to just open it up and get some brainstorming going on any additional ideas to the ones that we've already discussed in previous calls. So if anyone has any opinions on which recommendations they want to see, or which ones they don't think are maybe as relevant this time around.
Now, are we talking about the additional ones?
We're talking both about recommendations that were in the last plan, and
right,
also any potential ideas for new ones that weren't in the last plan and that we haven't talked about yet this year.
Okay. Well, I thought we beat the ones that were in the plan pretty badly at the last meeting.
We never touched on the ones that were in the last plan at the last meeting.
Well, I've got myself backwards in, but I've got the 2012-13 Biennial Plan Housing Committee recommendations.
Those were the ones that we talked about at the last meeting. And then a second document that was provided at the last meeting that we never got to was additional ideas.
Okay, well, that's what I asked.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, so the one that's titled Additional Ideas for Housing Recommendations, that's the document that I'm talking about.
Okay, did you get my email?
I got your email on edits to our current recommendations.
Okay, well, I sent one on the additional recommendations.
Oh, okay. Perhaps I misread it then. I'll look at that again.
Okay. Because I do have, with item one, I do have concerns in that if we're talking about making these a requirement for application for state funds, whether it be home or tax credits or bonds, to require everyone in there to go into service-enriched housing, including development of plans and development of all the other stuff, might be a little onerous.
So you're saying of the recommendations that we submitted in the last plan, the first one that has to do with the targeting plan, you're saying that it would be unpopular with the developers?
If going in, they are required to develop all of these plans and relationships, and if only, we'll say, 1 in 7 gets approved, you got 6 people out there won't know why they put all the dollars and work into it. If you wanted to, as we talked about, add points for doing this, and then the successful applicant must, within X period after notification of approval, submit a supportive housing plan for the targeted units, yada, yada, then I think it works.
Okay, so you're saying that given the discussions we've had this year, that this could be kind of a follow-up recommendation to the recommendation that we've made this year about providing some incentive points?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Well, and one comment on that, too, is that, you know, traditionally TDHTA and many other funders have had different ways of requiring supportive services. You know, from our perspective on our bond finance projects, all of our projects, doesn't matter if it's targeted for supportive housing or service-enriched housing, whatever, they are required to actually provide a tenant services plan, and that's something that they update annually. The key to that, I think, that we've seen success as far as adaptation by developers is we've made a plan that is relatively straightforward. It's really sort of a cafe plan where they know that they have to provide a certain number or of services on a monthly or quarterly basis. They, you know, literally can check off, five of, say, 30 different services that we've pre-approved. And it makes it very simple for the developers in that sense to be able to say, hey, we're going to choose these 5 services, we're going to provide them on a quarterly basis, and we're going to move forward with that plan. Now, that may not specifically work for the types of service-enriched housing that we're speaking of here, but it certainly could be modified in order to fulfill service-enriched housing needs, especially in those properties that do target people with disabilities or persons who are elderly or other special needs populations.
Yes, and Dave, currently as it exists, our housing tax credit program and our bond program have a tenant services plan, and when you're applying for housing tax credits or bonds, you state which of the options that are given to you in a list you're going to be providing to the tenants. And we were trying to go beyond that in order to assist the specific populations that the council is intending to serve. And I think that what we were trying to do with the recommendations from the last plan that are around targeting and a targeting plan is to say, how do we formalize this connection between the property management and the service provider that's providing specifically services that are support services to make sure that a person with a disability can maintain independent living. So I think that we're trying to take the basis of what's already in the regulations and take it a step further. Well, at least I think that that's where we were going.
Yeah, and I also, you know, in reviewing this too, could see that the proposal to sort of have the targeting and set asides under the QAP in particular could almost be separated from the service planning issue, and make the service planning issue more of a broad range thing, but under the QAP in particular, you know, setting aside 5 or 10 units or 10% of the units for the service enriched housing, it's something that does quickly become pretty simple. And I believe it was Mark. I think I'm just learning your names and voices, but you know, if the plan is something that is very simple to fill out and it's literally a group of check boxes, it's only going to take a developer, you know, 10-15 minutes to look through those and say, okay, well, at least we can just check off these boxes, and if we get our allocation of tax credits, then we go out and we find the key players that to help us fill those contract positions.
And I think that the ways in which that maybe runs into a bit of trouble is that typically we require the proof on the front end that they have those relationships set up if they're going to be using an outside service provider. Because if they are using someone outside, they have to show that they have a relationship already established when they request the points during the application process. So that's the way it currently works, and so that would possibly be a change to the program.
I would imagine too that the developers would actually like to see that change across the board, just because there's no reason to try to spend all the time and money to get contracts or agreements in place with organizations when you don't even know if you've got a deal. I mean, that's a big if to go forward. You know, like you said before, Mark, is if only 1 in 7 deals are getting done, but all 7 of them have to go out and find service providers, it's just not worth it. I mean, even if it's not service-enriched housing per se, but just basic services at the apartment complex, you know, like after-school care or computer labs and things like that. I mean, that's a lot of work to have to go set up all those plans to get service providers in place without even knowing, you know, that you're going to get the tax credits.
Okay. So is that kind of a tweak to a modification to the old 2010-2011 recommendation then on the targeting plan?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll try to craft something and see if I'm on the right track then, modifying that one.
And this is Jean, and I'm going to be very simplistic, as Ashley already knows from some emails I've sent. I know this may not be the time or whatever, but my frustration is we keep, I don't want to say arranging the chairs on the Titanic, because it's not the Titanic, but I want to have a recommendation that the council recommends the legislature designate general revenue funding for the specific purpose of building units of service-enriched housing. End of discussion. Now, I don't know. I don't want to jump in there. And I mean, they're the ones that created this council. And if they really care about creating service-enriched housing, we're going to have some money for it. I don't want to be so bold as say have it come from the Housing Trust Fund or all those other places, but I think we need to make a statement that if we want service-enriched housing, we're going to have some money for it. I don't know what else to do. I keep thinking we're looking at all of our programs and unwilling to direct the programs or tell the board of directors to direct the programs to do this. albeit with the Housing Trust Fund or whatever, and this committee was not created by TDHCA or any of the other state agencies. It was created by the legislature. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, so I think that that's a great recommendation to make. I think that that's something that we didn't make last time and would be a new recommendation. Is there further discussion on maybe fleshing out how that recommendation would be worded to the legislature?
Get specific in my way of thinking is we just give everybody more opportunity to say, oh, no, we can't do it from there. Oh, no, we can't do it from there. Well, you know, the legislature created us, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I can write up a recommendation of that nature. I just want to make sure I'm crafting it the right way. So I just want to know from the committee if there's any further thoughts or discussion on it. To say that the legislature should appropriate additional general revenue, but outside the housing trust fund, for the purposes of service-enriched housing, and would that money be implemented by a particular agency, by this council specifically? Kind of what the details of that would be. Do we have any further ideas there?
That's an awfully hard nut to crack. I agree with what Gene says, is to tell the legislature, you've told us to find a way to improve service and rich housing. The answer is you give some money to it, and that's your job. So go do your job, House and Senate. But on the other hand, and Gene, this goes back to another group we sit with, are we saying the state should sort of set up its own 811 fund? And build a project specifically for persons with disabilities in the, we'll say, in the 20 to 30 range? Or are we saying maybe they should put some money in that a developer who has successfully awarded credits and agrees to do X percent of service-rich housing has another pot of money out there that's put into the project?
The second, for me, I mean, I don't think we want to do anything. You know, those buildings over there, God knows we have enough state institutions for that. But more, I think the ability, be it rental subsidies or whatever, the problem we have is there's no money for this. I mean, really.
Well, that's not our problem.
I know. We didn't create this entity. The legislature did. So.
This is Mark. I would think the only practical, if it even is practical in this day and age with the fiscal situation, is to have it as some type of a supplemental add-on to an already funded project, because you can't, it'd be pretty tough to fund an entire project with the, in other words, you'd be basically paying for the incremental cost for whatever program you'd wish to be the primary funder of it.
Yeah, and it covers a pretty broad spectrum as well, because I may not be applying for, I'll say, housing development credits. I may be applying for credits to rehab a property, and where I could tap into this money is if I agreed to do 5 special needs housing, if I had an extra fund out there that could help me do the rehab on those units, then it makes life easier and it puts the units out there quicker.
Well, and see, okay, so building probably isn't the right word. Maybe I just say support units of service-enriched housing. I mean, I would be so bold as to have a recommendation that TDHA put in their LAR an exceptional item to use trust fund.
And then I get development, acquisition, and rehabilitation. Or I would almost say rental assistance for
support. I mean, if you say support or to create, to fund something even so generic, but that we, you know, basically say we've looked at all this stuff and there's got to be more money. These things don't happen, you know, because we wish it were so.
Mm-hmm. And so everyone knows, because I know not everybody has a legislative appropriations request and goes through that process. The way that that input is given is at the board meetings. If we receive public input at the board meetings as to something to request in our legislative appropriations request, then that's kind of the impetus, the starting point for making an exceptional item. So it could be some. I mean, I guess it depends on what avenue or what mechanism we're going down, because we can certainly create a recommendation in the biennial plan to say that the legislature should support units of service-enriched housing or fund units of service-enriched housing. We could also make a recommendation in the biennial plan to say TDHCA should have an exceptional item in their LAR to fund service-enriched housing. But in terms of the way that the timing matches up, our biennial plan is due August 1st, and the legislative appropriations request is due between 1 and 2 weeks after that. So the I guess if there was a strong want to approach the issue of exceptional items, it would have to be members of the council going to one of the upcoming board meetings and making that recommendation directly.
No, I think we could write if we all voted on it to do this from the committee, I don't know that we'd all have to go to your board meeting. We could send a letter to the director or something else, and they could give it to the board. I don't think you want to really tell us to come to your board meeting. I mean, if we come up with this recommendation now.
Yeah, we could send our chairman.
Well, you don't want to ask Gene to the board meeting.
Not under this circumstance. It's like I'm spending my time on this committee to try to give some recommendations because the governor wanted me to, darn it. So all of us are spending our time on this committee. So somehow, if we're going to make recommendations, they need to be able to get to the board of directors. And I'm not trying to be as upset as I'm getting, but
so you're saying that outside of the biennial planning process to craft a letter that could be provided to the board at an upcoming meeting?
Yeah, because I'm not sitting here gonna write this plan for the second or whatever time. And, oh, my gosh, well, the plan didn't get presented to the legislature, so, we won't be able to go for an LAR request until 2 years from now. Uh-uh. No, I definitely won't serve on this committee anymore, and I'll tell the governor why. I mean, we've got to get some kind of recommendation somewhere.
I understand that, and we can go down that road, but... So, Gene, it sounds like, but you're also kind of talking about the use of the biennial plan. And I think that's, once we craft it, I think that's a next step discussion is, how can the council use the biennial plan when discussing legislation with the legislature and with the governor?
Yeah, I mean, if we get, my idea of, obviously creating, and I'm not sure the timing or anything, I'm just saying we're all been sitting in all these committees and trying to come up with the recommendations. If they need to go now, we need to get them to the right place. If we agree on them, I know we're just a subcommittee now and all that, but we've got to do something with all this.
Okay, so the recommendation about an exceptional item, that's the only one that I was saying has a definitive deadline that TDHCA has to submit and therefore would have to have a earlier deadline than the biennial plan submission. That's the only one that I know of at this time. So that's something that if this committee agrees on crafting a letter that I can craft one and I can bring it to the full council meeting, if that makes sense.
I'd like that. I mean, I'd like something to come out that we can, we're not like writing a plan and talking about all these things and totally ignoring processes. Or being, you know, at the end of the day, we go, oh, sorry, you didn't do it the right way. You know.
Ashley, I don't know if you're, have you all discussed, I know if you don't institutionalize an idea or program, it often doesn't work, and I hate to, you know, just create new bureaucracy. But have y'all considered an LAR to staff up a little unit? I know you're a coordinator, but have y'all talked over there that that's a possibility, that you would kind of be a more formal part of TDHCA?
Are you talking about me?
No, the agency. This whole idea of the this type of emphasis with more of a you're now council support, but is there talk of the agency kind of making it a little program within itself or not?
About making what exactly a program within itself?
Well, some program that provides financial support to these types of projects.
So creating a new program.
Yeah.
As I'm not a member of exec, I have not been purview to any discussions on exceptional items of any nature. So I can ask obviously exec, but I'm not purview to those discussions. No.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that's a tricky conversation. I certainly appreciate that, but on the other hand, most agencies need some type of structure to deliver any type of program, whether it's to subsidize, you know, a certain type of activity or whatever. Just curious, mainly. I mean, if it's a potential recommendation, I know that could come across weird, but I don't think it's a terrible idea.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
I'm trying to think how long this has been happening, the whole council, but as expressed previously at meetings, we're not getting to where we're developing any units or providing any funding for it, not necessarily the units, but we're not increasing it, and I'm not sure if maybe like Mark's talking, it needs to be officially a place that money can go or that the activity can be there.
Well, and you know, it seems to me like you guys are kind of talking about the same thing under the Bootstrap program, where, you know, the Bootstrap program is primarily funded by the Housing Trust Fund right now, but it can and has been funded by other sources in the past.
Yeah.
And essentially, the guidelines for the program are in statute for TDHCA that, you know, it does require them or ask them to commit a certain portion, or the first $3 million, I think it is, of the Housing Trust Fund to the Bootstrap program. But, you know, it is a simpler, it's an interesting legislative way to essentially create a program, create opportunities for financing that program, and essentially the directive for the department or, you know, whoever gets the ultimate program to operate such a program and support it. I mean, the Housing Trust Fund has been used for a number of different things over the years. It's used for barrier removal, for veterans housing, for rehab, disaster relief, all the different activities you can think of. And that might be somewhat of a more streamlined recommendation, is to simply create a a program within statute which, you know, has a clear source or clear opportunities for funding. The risk is that money is not appropriated if it's a specific program and specific appropriations have to be assigned to it. But if it's simply a program that can be funded with a various amount of funds and then as either as a special request under the LAR or something, then the department can ask for additional monies for it, or it can just ask for additional monies under the Housing Trust Fund and say that part of those monies will fund that program.
David, that is a great analogy to the Bootstrap program. I mean, I think that's a great point, and Mark's point is very well provided. I mean, it's sort of, if we're going to see anything, we've got to have a program.
Well, the other example is the Colonia Fund. I'm more familiar with that. That's a
same idea, though. You know, it was a priority for
Center, yeah, Colonia Self-Help. It's carved out as a distinct unit with a distinct purpose.
Correct. Yeah. So I think we have to have a recommendation of that sort.
Okay, so then would that be a recommendation that there be, so basically it would be the creation of a service and risk housing program, which is, and I mean, so Dave was getting to the point of, do we say which would be required to be funded by X funding source, or?
Say the legislature will appropriate. We're recommending that the legislature will appropriate. Now, they can appropriate trust fund, or they can appropriate home, or they can appropriate whatever, like they do on those other programs. But we could use similar legislation, actually, to those other initiatives.
Okay, I'll look into the Bootstrap legislation so that I can figure out kind of how the wording works there, how the statute was crafted. So I'll look into that.
Yeah, we have Nelson introduce it. Sounds good to me.
Okay. All right. So I'll craft that one up for you guys. Is there other discussions on the additional ideas for the recommendations chapter?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Item two, don't we already have a deep skewing carve-out in the QAP?
We have points in the scoring criteria.
Yeah, so that there is already an incentive by additional points to do the 30% set-aside.
Okay.
And if they select that, then they got to go do it. But to say that every application has got to have so many units set aside at 30% may eliminate some units because sometimes they just won't work. You know, you can, I can do it with a 250-unit project, can't do it probably with a 90 to 100-unit project. It may not work without other outside funding.
Okay. So would your recommendation be to just not go forward with this recommendation again then?
Well, I don't mind incentivizing people to do it, but I don't want to say required to do it. And incentivize means they take the option because they've run the numbers and they know it'll work. And the other thing, when you do that, you have to understand that you start burning up dollars rapidly. The extremely low-income requirement that HUD has placed on the Section 8 program is going to eat their lunch eventually because the amount of subsidy required for existing units is going up much faster than the rate of inflation, if you will, or the rent increase factor, because every time you take somebody who's at 50% and replacing by somebody that's at 30%, you've just increased that subsidy by 20% on that unit. And so those subsidy dollars are just going to, they're going to fly, and we're essentially spending ourselves into a deep hole. So incentivize, I don't disagree with, but just care in how we work.
Okay. Any other ideas, thoughts on the previous biennium's recommendations or any new ideas?
Okay. Item three, if item one moves forward, it seems to me that three is not required. It's taken care of in item one.
And I just, as a point of clarification, which are we looking at, the additional ones or the ideas for additional housing recs or the committee recs from 2012-2013?
We're looking at the additional ideas document, which has the 2010-2011 housing recommendations in it.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so Mike's point was recommendation number three is not necessary if we move forward with number one.
Yeah, because if you move forward to number one, you got to have a services plan, which is in fact the linkage. Unless I may be too dense to understand, so please speak up if I'm wrong.
I think that there had been just separate discussions last time about one was about creating a targeting plan, and one was specifically about what services should be linked to. So if I remember that, it was basically just talking about the fact that currently there are certain services that would be needed for persons with disabilities and persons who are elderly, and so to make sure that we were specifying that it is those services that we need linkages to, so specific to long-term services and supports, and so I think that that's how number three came about.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm not passionate about it in one way or the other. It just seemed. It seemed to follow number one very closely, so that if one went forward, you're recommending the same thing using different words.
Okay.
Hey. I'm not passionate about doing anything to it.
Ashley?
Uh-huh.
Okay, these recommendations, let's say 2010-2011 biennial plan or housing recommendations?
Yes. So
these are what we had in our last plan.
Correct.
Okay. Maybe I missed something. Do we have anything where we found out if anything was done with any of these?
So the draft chapter one of this new plan, the 2012-2013 draft chapter one, has the basically what efforts have been made, if any, on the recommendations.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have that right in front of me. It was brought to this committee not last meeting, but the meeting before that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have it in front of me. I don't have the...
Yeah, and I'm kind of lost. I kind of remembered that, and I'm kind of like, why are we looking at the original recommendation? Well, if something happened, I don't know that we would want to repeat it. So maybe we need to be looking at Chapter 1 before we consider these... You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of totally confused, because I was particularly getting to number 7 going, wait a minute... The housing navigators. Did this happen, or what happened? And
right.
Why are we looking at this? And so,
the reason why. So when I had tried to figure out, okay, if we want to round out the housing recommendations chapter, what else do we want to include? And the feedback that I had received from Elizabeth and from Brooke was, well, you should probably ask them if there are recommendations from the original plan that they think are still relevant and still want to be recommended. So that's why. I brought them again to everyone.
Okay, then I need to take the time to go back and look at the new chapter one and figure out where we are on these. because that I was kind of like, I understand I'm reading what we had before, and I'm going, I thought we did something, so.
Sure, sure, yeah.
And I need to, I'm not prepared, let me put it that way, because I need to go back and see, you know, if we've already done this, or if it didn't get done, then why didn't it get done, and then why would we want to repeat it, if it's like, okay, no, we can't do this. Like the whole number six, modify the multifamily bond program rules. I don't think that happened.
The other thing, Ashley, is and members, is I think in the document we had previously, the first, second, and sixth, and seventh recommendations already kind of in the working document cover the QAP, and I looked at them, and they're somewhat similar to the one we were just discussing, so... We already have four recommendations on it. I think we kind of have it covered in a certain sense.
Right. And I think that that was another part of why I was wanted to talk about what other avenues, what other programs, what other funding sources does the committee want to talk about when we talk about affordable housing for the state of Texas.
Yeah, but the first two are set asides, I believe, and then there was one on some prioritization or whatever on the QAP. So there were at least three that were similar in nature.
Right. So I think, so Mark, what you're saying is that we do, and then you're right, we do have a lot of recommendations surrounding the QAP, both the new ones we've crafted this year and old ones that we may want to use again next year.
And I guess ideally you want to get at least your best one or a few that would have a chance of success. You know, you could throw five or six there, but if you two or three that have a pretty good chance of success are probably better than four or five that aren't going to make it, and maybe trying to focus just on the ones that at least have a prayer of getting implemented would be my preference, at least.
Okay. You're saying...
And I'm not sure which ones those are, actually, in members. I'm just saying that much of that depends on who's pushing it what type of support it gets from both internally and externally, but a couple things that are actually going to be implemented in part or in whole would be preferable, and I honestly don't know the odds of these respective recommendations, but I do know that you want to focus at least on a few that have a chance of success.
Okay. Here's what I can do for our next meeting is that I can combine the discussions that were had last meeting about the new set of recommendations that the council has talked about, and I can also provide what we recommended last time along with any progress made on those old ones. Is that better, more clear for you guys to be able to see, I guess, all together what we have in the universe of recommendations and then be able to scale it down from there?
That would help.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be very helpful.
Okay. Okay.
And are you going to craft something, Ashley, similar to what we just discussed previously about some type of... You had mentioned that, right? That would be included about a unit within TDHA?
Right. So, yeah. So I said that I would look into bootstraps enabling legislation so I can figure out what kind of language they use there and try to mimic that.
Good.
Okay. So that's what I guess that's what I can do, because I'm sorry, I really didn't mean to confuse anyone on the what we were trying to do today. I was just trying to bring forward the old recommendations to see if there were ones that we wanted to keep, but I understand that we have been kind of going into a lot of depth in the QAP, so maybe we have some duplicative or some, I guess we have a lot that's going on in terms of recommendations surrounding the QAP, so I can try to clean everything up and consolidate it together for you all to see for next time, along with what is going to be in draft chapter one as to the progress that's been made on the last plan's recommendations. So I'll do that. So I think that that's the direction I'll take there. The next item on the agenda was looking at the recommendations on cross-agency coordination, education, and training. And the background there was that we, for our last plan, we had a committee that was specific to cross-agency education and training. And so they had crafted recommendations which were found in Chapter 7 and 8 of the old biennial plan. Basically, I thought that because we don't have that committee anymore, but we still have that statutory responsibility, that we might want to bring those old recommendations to both of the committees that are the 2012-2013 committees to say, you know, here's what we had last time. A lot of these have been done, and I can go through the ones that we made a lot of progress on, but a lot of them have not. So to kind of talk about whether or not we want to forward some of those old recommendations on again in terms of cross-agency education and training. So the document that I had sent out to everybody has those old recommendations. So they start with recommendations for at the state agency level, so state to state. The first recommendations were creating a user-friendly reference guide, which we did create a reference guide that is provided on the council's website. The second recommendation was to create a simple series of training modules. That one has not moved forward as far as the reference guide, so that one is something that is still an outstanding piece. And actually, there may be movement on the training now that TDHCA has received the money through DADS from CMS to hire an FTE to do education, training, and outreach. So we may see some movement in the near future on that one. Then the next recommendation is dealing with the utilization of information technology. We did meet with the Texas Information and Referral Network, 211 Texas, about creating a resource directory. And they said that they'd be willing to partner with us on creating something of that nature. That would require a bit more of their time, which you know, I think we would have to make sure that we that our HHSC representative maybe could have some pull in that, bringing them into a resource directory. Then the standardization quick facts webpage on each state agency's website. We haven't really gotten very far on trying to get every state agency to create some standardized language. I think that would be really helpful, and I think that's something we haven't yet done. And then the monthly listserv, we do have the council now has a monthly listserv that goes out about different funding opportunities that are available, and it's actually more geared towards those recipients of state funding rather than the state agencies themselves. So that is currently in place right now. Then the utilization of the intranet for information dissemination amongst agency staff, I think that was really tied to making sure that we could have housing agencies that understood what the service agencies were doing and service agencies understanding what housing agencies were doing. So I think that's an ongoing recommendation. Periodic program updates for each state agency that highlights programs and program staff. I think that one is, there are some state agencies that do a newsletter or do something on their intranet And so trying to figure out, you know, what all that is happening with different state agencies and educating one another through program updates. So these are the kind of things that we talked about last time, or that were recommended last time. I don't know if I should continue going through these or if you guys have any recommendations. Do you guys have any guidance on whether or not we should continue just saying what did happen and what hasn't happened, or there are specific ones that we really like and want to continue on with?
I think some of these are not necessarily doable, or they don't necessarily make sense now. Maybe I'm wrong, a landlord orientation presentation. I don't know that we do want to continue. I mean, I think the good things that have started, I don't know that we're going to report that it's there, like your notices on grant opportunities, but I don't know that we need to continue to just have the same recommendations listed. I don't know that I'm making any sense, but I'm looking at it as you're going to report on this, right? I mean, or that's not chapter.
Yeah, so we're reporting on this, like what has been done, the progress has been done so far in chapter one.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it's just like we continue to have a progress report on cross education and training. And maybe that's the way we go about it, rather than crafting entirely new recommendations.
Right.
And that's certainly an option. We can continue on that route of continuing to further these efforts without having to add to the list.
Right. Because I think obviously the committee's done a lot of time on it. So
yeah.
If they haven't gotten done, they still need to be worked on, then that's consideration. I don't think we need to create any more.
Okay.
That's me. I just want to create housing.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what I hope, you know, what to me the reason why these are still relevant, not to say we have to add to them, but why they are still relevant for our plan is because in trying to make sure that we develop these partnerships among state agencies, what we're realizing, and I think that an example can be the partnership between TDHCA and DADS, is that we're realizing that through our agency partners, we're able to tap into opportunities that we would never have known would have existed before when it comes to federal funding. You know, with DADS, I mean, looking at the CMS grants that we've received, two CMS grants in the last 6 months that we've received, if we didn't have that standing partnership with DADS, and if we hadn't, you know, kind of had to really deepen that partnership fairly quickly, then we would never have been able to get those grants, which getting those grants means we have, for one of them, it means more FTEs, and the other one, it means preparing for applying for housing funding. So, you know, I think that that's why I would consider this, you know, still very relevant to the council's mission and purpose. And so we can certainly continue to keep these same ones. I just wanted to put them in front of the committee just to bounce any ideas off of if you guys had any opinions.
Well, this Mark, I think a lot of them look good. I just there might be a few that after you've dealt with them for a while, you realize that they're unlikely to occur, and maybe those could be removed. And but a lot of them look pretty good still to me.
Okay.
I mean, some like the round tables, I don't know whether that's just a really hard to pull off, you know, and whether we can be the spearhead for that with the under local to local and everything. I just, you know, if you just think it's not realistically ever going to occur, I guess we would probably want to remove it. But other than that, it would always give you something to, it doesn't, some of these don't cost a ton of money, at least with presumably be somewhat beneficial.
Absolutely. And yeah, there are ones which were very easily approached, such as, we decided that we wanted to do the reference guide, and so we went ahead and did it, or we went ahead and, said, hey, guess what? The idea to have an information clearinghouse for providers and consumers about what options are available in their geographic area, that's something that we put into the CMS grant, which we were awarded. So that's currently underway right now. So some of those things, it was easy to put the components together or to find a way of fitting that into a request for funding. Others, you're right, may be a little bit harder nuts to crack, or maybe would just require an additional funding source or additional collaborations amongst agencies, and so you're right that there are ones that are easier than others, and so we can talk about if there are ones that just are too unrealistic and we should remove them. If you think that there's some that just you don't think are going to be feasible at all, we can do that.
Well, the other thought, kind of in that same vein, is you don't want all your recommendations to be just tied to funding or just kind of the major. You got to have a few that are internally doable, regardless of other people's actions, because otherwise you run the risk of not having certain activities to do good with. If you're hinging all your recommendations on new funding, or as much as I think we should recommend maybe a new unit in TDHA, I still think you need a few that you can work on throughout the year and accomplish some good things without necessarily getting a large amount of additional funding.
Hmm. Okay. Any other thoughts about this handout? Okay. All right. So it sounds like the main task for me is to make sure I have everybody's feedback on the set of recommendations that were talked about at the last meeting, so the 2012-2013 recommendations, make sure I have those all cleaned up with all the revisions, and combine those with our old recommendations into one document and have the progress on those old recommendations also provided. So I will do that, and I will bring it to you guys, and I will bring any letter that could be potentially for the exceptional items for the LAR to be provided to the governing board. I can bring a draft of that letter as well. Does that sound like everything?
No donuts.
No donuts. Still no donuts.
Okay.
Okay.
That wrapped up very well.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure I know what to bring forward to the next meeting. Is there anything else that you guys want me to provide for the next meeting?
No, ma'am.
No, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll craft that information up for you guys and hope to get it to you. I really do want to get it to you earlier than I did this time, because this time I was out of town. I was out of the office last Thursday and Friday, so I wasn't able to work on stuff. So I'll try to get it to you further in advance. And our next committee meeting, April 18th, if the 2 p.m. time frame doesn't work for anyone, shoot me an email and we can always rearrange the time. So, but if 2 p.m. works, then we'll stick with 2 p.m. on the 18th.
Okay.
That sounds good.
Okay. Thank you guys so much for attending.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye.